Editorial note. At which point, we find ourselves once again having to turn to other sources for a proper appreciation of the bigger picture, the first of which, at least, is readable. The second is as painful as the rest of Sulla's assaults on the Gothic language, but I've included it for its summation of what was happening to the rest of the regiment while Kane was otherwise occupied. As Tin Crozer summarizes events adequately enough, readers of a refined sensibility may skip it if they wish, although it does provide a first-hand account of an aspect of the conflict which he, along with most Adumbrians, remains unaware of to this day. From Sablist in Skitterfall, A Brief History of the Chaos Incursion by Dagblatt Tin Crozer, 957 M41.
As the enemy battleship continued to bear down on the flotilla of merchant vessels and the defiant Indestructible, which seemed all that stood between them and certain destruction, the surviving transport ships remained in orbit, pouring their cargo of traitors and heretics onto the planet below. Many of the beleaguered defenders still hoped for the mighty Imperial vessel to intervene, but it remained resolutely in place. In truth, it could do little else by now, since to turn away in pursuit of a handful of scattered targets would achieve little beyond exposing itself to the guns of the enemy. Furthermore, there were the merchant ships to consider, a little over 1,000 of them at this point, all helpless against the predator closing in on them. Though no one wanted to admit it, the protection of the merchant vessels was the battleship's highest priority. These ships would be needed if the worst were to happen and an evacuation became necessary. So they had to be defended, while the now empty transport vessels, having succeeded in their fell design, presented little further threat. Nevertheless, we can still appreciate the frustration felt by the crew of the Indestructible and the apprehension of the merchant crews as the Chaos Leviathan continued to coast towards them. If the battle in space had become a waiting game, however, the battle for the planet below had reached fever pitch. The invaders had struck almost everywhere at once, concentrating, as one might expect, a considerable proportion of their force against the planetary capital. Skitterfall became a grim battleground, where PDF and Imperial Guard elements fought for control of the streets against apparently inexhaustible numbers of fanatical heretics, whose only imperative appeared to be to cause as much death and destruction as possible. Making no apparent distinction between defenders and civilians, they slaughtered their way to the city center, while the gallant defenders withdrew to regroup in the northern suburbs. Here, the fighting became even fiercer, as the invaders' confederates emerged from hiding to wreak further mischief of their own. And this pattern continued all over Adumbria. On the cold side, hidden renegades appeared, intent on hampering the defense of Glacier Peak, although the Valhallans prevailed over them as easily as the invaders themselves. On the hot side, the Talans were hard-pressed as before, despite the lack of any obvious targets of strategic value, their rough riders galloping to the defense of the inhabitants of the scattered desert hamlets. And throughout the Shadow Zone, the battle to cleanse the soil of our home world from the taint of the unclean continued unabated.
From Like a Phoenix on the Wing, The Early Campaigns and Glorious Victories of the Valhallan 597th by General Jennet Sulla, retired, 101 M42.
Notwithstanding the impression of imperturbability I took such pains to present to my subordinates, my readers will, I am sure, readily appreciate the apprehension I felt at the Colonel's warning. I had scarcely had time to come to terms with my sudden and unexpected elevation, let alone come to know my new subordinates as anything other than the casual acquaintances of the officers' mess that they had until so recently been. Nevertheless, we were all soldiers of the Guard, the finest and most noble exemplars of humanity, so my confidence in their abilities was as high as it could be, and for my part I was quietly determined to provide them with the leadership such heroic women and men deserved. With but a handful of minutes before the enemy onslaught was upon us, I checked the dispositions of the platoons under me in the tactical display of the company command chimera. Indeed, were it not for the extra data feeds and vox links surrounding me, I could almost have fancied myself back in command of my old platoon. To my relief, our units were responding well to the alert, the platoon commanders as efficient as I could have wished, and glancing at the image in the hololith, I was left in no doubt that our readiness to meet the heretic threat was as high as it was possible to be. All we could do now was wait for their shuttles to ground, and move in as rapidly as we could to contain them. And we weren't to be left waiting long. Within moments I heard the shriek of their engines, even through the thick armored hull of the Chimera, a sound which was shortly to be terminated by the ice-shaking impact of their landing. One shuttle at least would not be returning to the vermin-laden vessel whence it came, as it had the misfortune to fly in directly over the heads of 3rd Platoon, who welcomed it as warmly as one might expect with the combined firepower of their heavy weapons and Chimera-mounted bolters. "It's down and burning," Lieutenant Roxwell reported, unable to keep a note of satisfaction from his voice, and under the circumstances I could scarcely reprove him for that. Even before I could give the order, he began moving his squads in to mop up the survivors, of which there were to prove far too many for comfort. Like the ones who had attacked us before, they fought like men possessed, heedless of their own safety or sound tactical doctrine. The fight became bloody, but their overconfidence was our strongest weapon, save for our faith in the Emperor, of course. And it wasn't long before our superior competence and fighting spirit began to tell. The second shuttle landed over 2 kilometers away, near the mine workings, but we had anticipated that, and 1st Platoon were waiting for them, ready to give them the bloody nose all who dare to raise arms against the Emperor so richly deserve, and invariably receive. Nonetheless, their charge was ferocious, and our line buckled in places, allowing them to break through into the town itself before 4th Platoon could move up to reinforce the gallant warriors of 1st. Thus it was we found ourselves faced with 2 hordes of fanatics rampaging through Glacier Peak from opposite directions, firing indiscriminately at guard troopers, praetor riot squads, and unarmed civilians alike. Indeed, some even seemed to prefer the slaughter of innocent victims to facing our guns, cowards that they were. The time was right for a bold initiative, and I ordered my unengaged units to consolidate around my command vehicle in the town square, where the twin thrusts of the enemy could be met simultaneously and held apart. For were they to meet and converge, the combined horde would undoubtedly have been able to wreak far more damage than either had managed alone. In this we were aided by 2 circumstances no one could have readily anticipated. The single-mindedness of the invaders, which allowed 1st and 3rd platoons to wrap around their flanks and harass them all the way in, and the unexpected intervention of the underground cult we had spent so much time and effort attempting to expunge since our arrival on Adumbria. It may be recalled that, as Commissar Kane was the first to point out, the invaders and the insurgents we had been engaging prior to their arrival appeared to owe their allegiance to rival chaos powers, and this was to be confirmed in the most unexpected fashion, as motley groups of armed civilians appeared in the streets to harass the invaders. I'm pleased to report that our women and men made no distinction between them, gunning down this breed of heretic whenever they appeared as eagerly as they did the crimson-uniformed foot soldiers of the traitor infantry. But the insurgents never retaliated in kind, concentrating all their efforts on killing the minions of their hated rivals, even as they fell to the cleansing lasbolts of the guard. For my part, it must be said, I was considerably taken aback by their fixity of purpose, finding in it proof of the insanity which must surely be the state of mind of all who turn their gaze from the Emperor's light. Nevertheless, they served a noble purpose, however base and corrupt their souls, for their intervention must surely have hastened the inevitable victory of the heroes I had the privilege to lead. At the risk of appearing immodest, I have to say that my strategy worked. Both arms of the invasion force met our solid center and were successfully repulsed. Unable to break through, they were easily surrounded by the pursuing elements of 1st and 3rd platoons, who used the superior mobility afforded by their chimeras to good effect, and were utterly annihilated in gratifyingly short order. It was, it must be admitted, our great good fortune that all the invaders who attacked Glacier Peak were on foot, since many of their other units were equipped with vehicles of their own. Indeed, the group which assaulted our base was supported by a battle tank, which Commissar Kane disabled single-handedly during his inspirational marshalling of our forces there. And the main force, which landed west of the town, to be met by the bulk of our own troops, had a couple of tanks and a handful of armoured transports. These were disabled in pretty short order by 4th and 5th Company, who had concealed their heavy weapons teams in ambush prior to the traitor's landing. And their victory, I am gratified to report, was no less complete than ours, despite the greater numbers involved on both sides.